out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 22nd of May, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Normally, I would have Nat Dainlaw with me, but he's not very well. He sounds really rough, actually. I've just spoken to him, so he sends his apologies to listeners, and you're just going to have to do with me on my own today. And what I really think I should talk about is the Manchester bombing, since today is the anniversary of this hideous bomb that went off last year at an Ariana Grande concert. Apparently there's been about 200 people injured in all. I believe there was 22 people killed. And the injuries that these people sustained were hideous. This was a bomb that was filled up with shrapnel and nails and all sorts. And a lot of these people have been on the television today and, you know, they're scarred for life. You know, their faces are all cut up. They've got mental damage, psychological damage. Seven of the people killed were children. And the guy that actually did this, he was a Libyan. He had been welcomed into Britain by Tony Blair. Welcome, come into Britain. You don't like Colonel Gaddafi, so we're going to be friends with you. And I believe it was one of his sons, this guy that they invited into Britain. It was one of his sons that did this. He's still got a brother. And his brother is actually out in Libya at the moment, and he's just refusing to come to Britain to face trial, and apparently Britain can't do anything about that. We can bomb people in Syria who have never attacked anyone in Britain. I mean, it's far too far away for them to get to attack us in Britain. Yet this guy is just over there in Libya, and we're saying we can't actually get hold of him. We're locked in a dispute with Libya over his extradition. It's just, it's just amazing that, you know, they tell us that we've got to go bombing Syria, but people that have actually attacked us, Muslims that have actually attacked us over there in Libya, in a country that we are supposed to have good relations with, because we toppled Colonel Gaddafi and we're supposed to have brought democracy to Libya. Libya is supposed to be in a better condition now than it was. They're supposed to be really thankful to the British for all the good things that we've done in Libya, and yet they won't actually hand this guy over. And that attack on Libya was one of the worst things that has ever happened in Africa, really. I mean, Colonel Gaddafi, he was a good guy. He made certain that all his people were housed. He made certain they all learned how to read and write. He was paying for them to go to university. He would even pay for young women to be accompanied by their brothers if they went into Europe to university. And he wrote his Green Book talking about nationalism, basically. He was a nationalist. And he wanted the blacks in Europe to come back to Libya. He wanted the blacks to come back to Africa. That was a big part of his program. He was going to send people over into Europe to monitor the blacks and see how well they were being treated and try to encourage them to come back to Africa. And of course, he also prevented blacks from leaving Libya and invading Europe. So, of course, people in Britain and in America, they couldn't handle him and they wanted to get rid of him. So they encouraged jihadis to topple him. Nasty jihadis, Al-Qaeda type jihadis, the same type that blew up this bomb at Manchester. And one of these jihadis who was involved in the revolution last year, who was right at the front of it, carried out lots of atrocities. We've just apologized to him and given him £500,000, I think it is. and we've apologised to him for the terrible crime of handing him over to Gaddafi as a criminal, as a wanted criminal, because he was a wanted criminal. And he was involved in this revolution, and he did all these horrific acts, and now he's managed to get the British government to actually apologise to him. So we're apologising to the jihadis over there in Libya, the same people that set this bomb off in Manchester. And while that's going on, we've got 200 people over here that who are going to be damaged for the rest of their lives from what they saw at this Manchester arena. And they're all talking about how all we need is love. We must have more love. We're not going to allow these evil people to defeat us. And not one of them is saying, well, hang on a minute, how are we going to defeat terrorism with love? Shouldn't we be talking about removing the terrorists from Britain? Shouldn't we talk, why are they here in the first place? Why have we got Muslims here in Britain? What positive things do they bring us apart from rape gangs and terrorism and drugs? No, they're all talking about, well, all we need is love. That's all we need. That's going to stop the terrorism. I'm not quite sure how they're intending to do that. I guess they're just going to wave a white flag if they become attacked, or maybe that's what they, why they're not doing anything about the rape gangs. Maybe that's what they mean by all we need is love. We just need to feed the Muslims with more white women, and then maybe they'll leave us alone. I don't think they're going to leave us alone. I think we're going to have more terrorist attacks. And this time last year, this one in Manchester, that was, I believe it was the third one. We had three of them all in a row. And since then, we've had more terrorist attacks in Europe. Luckily, we haven't had any in Britain. What they did in Britain, I mean, they were very quick off the mark in Britain to start locking up nationalists, because they think nationalists are the real threat. They've likened Tommy Robinson to a jihadi for warning people about the threat that Islam poses. And we still have nationalists in prison today that have been accused of being members of National Action, the nationalist youth organisation that Amber Rudd banned. Instead of banning Islamic organisations, they ban the organisations that are blowing the whistle and raising the alarm about the Islamic terrorists. And moving on forward to today, we've still got Jack Renshaw. He's in prison. He's been accused of plotting to murder an MP. I doubt very much whether he was plotting to murder an MP. I think he was just joking in a pub. But because he's been associated with the group National Action, he's on remand and in prison. And we've got Mikko Väinänen, a Finnish guy, again, who's been accused of being a member of National Action. But there is no more National Action. The organisation itself, it just stopped being an organisation on the day that they were banned as being terrorists. And I guess the guys thought, well, that will be the end of it. I certainly know that the leaders of the former organisation thought that would be the end of it. But little were they to know that the government were going to use that as an excuse to just go after nationalists anyway, and then accuse them of being members of National Action. If they are accused of being members of National Action, then they're accused of being terrorists, therefore they need to be put on remand, therefore they will be in prison, and therefore they can't do any demonstrations or get involved in any activism. I think that's the logic that that the government put into this. So they're persecuting nationalists, they're locking us up in prison, they're making nationalist organisations out to be terrorists, and at the same time they're saying, well, all we need to defeat the terrorists is love, and we'll have a big church service today and we'll invite everybody there, and they can paint stones with love on these stones. They've got all these painted stones with people painting positive messages on them, and nobody is saying, look, these people aren't going to be stopped by us telling them that they love us. The only thing that's going to stop these people is removing them from our country. We have to start repatriating them, and we have to stop any more from coming in, and we have to stop saying that all religions are equal and that Islam is a religion of peace. Where has Islam been the peacemaker? Where does it say in the Quran, blessed are the Muslim peacemakers? It doesn't. It says that the Muslims are supposed to kill the unbelievers. They're supposed to behead the unbelievers, and the unbelievers' women can be taken as sex slaves. And if we look back in history, if we look back at the history of Islam, there's just been hundreds and hundreds of wars that they have started where they have tried to invade Europe and take over Europe. And it took us centuries to beat them back from Spain and to get Spain back. And it took us nearly as long to get back Bulgaria and these other countries that they invaded. And they never come to a treaty. They've never came to a peace treaty. They never said, well, we've got no interest in invading Europe anymore. We just ended up having a war with the Ottomans and defeating them. But even at the end of that, there was no, well, that's it. Okay. We'll allow you to have Europe and we'll have the Middle East. There's never going to be an end to it because it's part of the religion that they need to conquer. They need to conquer the other lands. They conquered the Middle East. I mean, the Middle East used to be partially still white in the 6th century. It was still white in plenty of areas in the 6th century until the Arabs invaded. Ethiopia still had white people in it until the Arabs invaded. And this is what happens when Arabs invade a country. They destroy all the white bloodlines. Well, they do their best to destroy them. And the people that aren't Muslims are treated as slaves and they're treated as second-class citizens. And the only way that they can improve their lot is if they agree to become Muslims. And obviously, when they agree to become Muslims, that's not done out of any free will. That's not done because they've looked at the Islamic philosophy and thought, well, this is a good thing. I understand this. This is very just and righteous. They just join because they're sick and tired of being treated as slaves. And Islam doesn't really care about that. Islam doesn't really care about free will. I mean, Christianity wants people to accept Christianity because they see it as being the sensible thing to do. They want people to look at it and think about it logically and use their reason and say, well, yes, this is the truth. That's why I become a Christian. I mean, this is the source of why we have schooling, why everybody goes to school. The church wanted to teach people how to read and write so that they could work it out for themselves that Christianity is the truth. But Islam's not interested in people working out that Islam is the right way to be. They just want people to convert to it at the end of a sword. Because what it's all about is getting everybody to obey Sharia law. It's about having an empire, a Muslim empire of brown people just serving a clique at the top. And I get annoyed when people liken Islam to fascism because it's not like fascism. It's like communism. Everybody is equal in Islam. Everybody is a Muslim. And everything that they take from the dhimmis, that they take from the non-Muslims, gets shared out among the Muslims. It's far more like communism than fascism. In places like Syria, Iraq, and Iran, everybody is fed by the government. They all get the equivalent of dole money. There is very little incentive to do any better than that. And the money comes from, as I say, it comes from the people that aren't Muslims. And if you look at the countries that Islam has taken over, they just pretty much destroy them. If you look at the Middle East, the Byzantine Empire, what that used to be on a level of civilization with Europe, with the rest of Europe. And now you've got places like Egypt, places like Iraq, places like Palestine. And the only reason why they have actually got any wealth is because you've got Saudi Arabia with oil there and Kuwait. But the Muslims themselves aren't capable of creating things for themselves. All they did was steal from Christian civilization. All these ideas that we get that the golden age of Islam, where they talked about alchemy and they talked about mathematics. Well, no, these were Byzantine Christians that did this. And when their lands got taken over by Islam, then they had to call themselves Muslims. And then the Muslims stole all that intellectual worth and claimed it for themselves. So they have no business being in Europe. All they want to do in Europe is take the place over for the world caliphate. And the people that call for Muslims to be allowed in, strangely enough, are the Jews. And, you know, we say this so often on Radio Aryan. that the Jews work hand in hand with the Muslims. It's a big scam to think that just because Israel is at loggerhead with the Palestinians, that Jews and Muslims are against one another. And we can see this with the Islamic jihadis in Syria, ISIS, the Islamic State. They're funded by Israel. They stop off and use the Israeli hospitals. We've had high up members of the Israel government say that they would rather have ISIS running Syria than they would have Bashar al-Assad running the place. We see the way that Israel works with Saudi Arabia. You won't see the Saudis questioning what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. And if we look back in history, we can see that it was Jews that opened the gates to Muslims in Spain. It was Jews that opened the gates to Muslims in Iran, what was once Persia. And we can see that it was Jews that opened the gates to the Muslims in Bulgaria. I mean, they do have form at doing this. And now we see that the people that are advocating the most to allow refugees into Britain, again, once again, it's Jews. That's what they do, because they benefit from this. The less they stand out among the rest of us, then the easier it is for them. This is the evolutionary drive behind them encouraging other races into our countries, is so that they don't stand out so much. If you think about it, when you just had Europe, before we had Muslims and non-whites, especially in Britain, all you had was the British people, and then you had the Jews. So it was much easier to tell if somebody was a Jew than it is today. This is one of the problems we face. People watch the television and they don't realise that the people that they are actually watching on there are Jews, because they look so similar to us. And this is why we used to make them wear special clothing to identify themselves as Jews to us, so that we knew we needed to beware. We needed to be careful. This person is not what he seems. He is not one of us. He's trying to get one over on us. He hates us because we are Christians, and we remind him of the fact that he is a Jew and he is excluded from Christianity. So we made them wear special clothes to warn us about this person, so that we didn't borrow money from him. We didn't do any deals with him. We didn't agree to work for him. We didn't allow him into our homes as a medical professional. All these sorts of things that Jews would do in order to get one over on us. If you knew that they were a Jew, then you'd be on your guard. You would be wary. That's the origin of the Jewish star. I mean, it goes back to the church saying that they had to wear clothing in order to warn the rest of us, so that we knew who they were. And when Adolf Hitler brought in the wearing of the Jewish star to identify them, I mean, that was just a Roman Catholic Church ruling from centuries before that he was bringing back. Over here in Britain, we made them wear pointy hats, which is, of course, where we get the story from, that the witches wear the pointy hats. And so much of the harm that's been done to our countries has been encouraged on by Jews over the years. They have a real hatred for the Gentiles, and it does go back to Christianity. And it just, the official teaching from the church is that the faith of Christianity, it came from the Old Testament, came from the Hebrew faith, and because the Jews killed Christ, God turned to the nations. He turned to the Gentiles, and all the promises and all the covenants from the Old Testament then applied to the Gentiles who became Christians. And the Jews, they're cursed to eternally be a curse. And that's the official church teaching. And personally, I believe that the Jews were excluded. It wasn't that they rejected Christ. It was that Christ rejected them. It was that God rejected them. But either way, it means that they are excluded from Christianity. And that's what's at the root of their hatred. They know that we are favored and they are not. This is why they ban the word Yahweh. They can't even say the word Yahweh. They can't write it. They can't speak it. They forced us, or encouraged us, to remove the word Yahweh from our own Bibles. And when you think about it, that's like a bastard being told that he cannot use the surname of the father. And that's exactly what it is, that they are not allowed to use the word of God. They're not allowed to use God's name because they're bastards, because they're not his sons. They're not his children. And we remind them of that. And we remind them of the fact that we are still pure white, and they're not. They're miseducated. They are mongrelized, and they will never, ever be able to go back to being white people again. At some point in the far, far distant past, they did originate as white people. But then they interbred with Negroes and Arabs and became the people that they are today. And there is a hatred in these non-white races for white people because they see what they once had and they no longer have. So it's a drive within them to turn everybody else into the same situation that they are in. They aren't white anymore, and they don't see why other people should be white. So you've got a drive there that is out of jealousy, and you've also got a drive amongst the non-whites to try and lighten their skin. They like to breed with white people because they know then that the offspring that they have is going to have a lighter skin. And they would very much like to be able to get back to being white again, because the lighter the skin they have, usually the higher up they are in the aristocracy. And you find this all around the world. You'll find this in Brazil, that there's a color divide, and the whiter the skin is, the higher up you are in aristocracy. And you find exactly the same thing in India. You find it in China and Japan, the women there. It's a sign of great beauty to have white skin. And yet here we are, the white race, blessed with white skin, and we don't seem to realize that actually that's the greatest gift that anyone on earth could ever possibly have, is to be born white. And we just throw it away. We have people that just throw that away, and we'll get into bed with a Negro, or we'll get into bed with an Arab or an Indian and produce mongrels. Look at London, 60% non-white. I mean, just about everybody you see now that claims that they come from London, they're a dirty brown colour where they have miscegenated. And yet what these people are doing, what they are throwing away just for a quick roll in the hay, and they're throwing away thousands and thousands of years worth of genetic inheritance. When you think about it, if you're white, every single one of your ancestors made the right choice. They were righteous, and they married someone of the same kind as they were. And that's why you're white today. Every single one of them made the right choice, and they made certain that that inheritance was passed on to their children undamaged. And then we have people today that, instead of seeing themselves as just a trustee in a long line of white people, they think that precious gift is theirs to throw away. It's not theirs to throw away. It belongs to their descendants. They are just looking after it. They are just the trustees. They are supposed to be keeping it, and keeping it in good condition, and possibly improving on it by interbreeding with someone a little bit further up the social scale than they are, and then handing that down to their descendants. Certainly not theirs to throw away. And these people that have thrown it away today, I think if only they knew the precious value of what it is that they had thrown away, you know, they would be in penitence for the rest of their lives if they really realized the value of what it is that they have thrown away, and what they have done to their half-caste children. You imagine it. It's an everlasting curse that you are putting on your offspring if they are mixed race. And this is the example that we're seeing set by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. This is the seal of approval for miscegenation right at the very top of the aristocracy, right at the top of the noble lineage. We are now seeing approval of miscegenation and race mixing. And of course, this is a wonderful thing for the Jews. You can see that in the media. They're all whooping and cheering about it and saying what a great celebration of blackness it is. All the blacks are thinking it's great. They've got their foot inside the palace door. They know that they can contaminate Harry's line forevermore now. He's going to be having non-white children. And the really sad thing about that is that they will still have the same surname, and they will still be seen as royal. And the chances are that they will go on to pollute the royal bloodline in somewhere like Denmark or Sweden or any of these other countries that still have royal families, they will be looking at the offspring of Harry as legitimate royals and somebody that they could marry. I really do feel like we're living in end times. I do feel like we're living in end times because the white race, I don't think it has ever been in such a small proportion that it is today. I mean, we used to have white empires in the Middle East. We had white civilizations in India, white civilization in Egypt, white civilization even in the land that's known as Ethiopia now. We had whites in America, and every single one of them died out due to miscegenation, due to blending in with the races that are around them. And the only place left we had was Europe, because it was cold, because they couldn't make their way to Europe themselves. They didn't have the skills to make seaworthy boats and sail over here. So we were safe in Europe for a good 2,000 years, apart from the odd scuffle with the Muslims, as I say, with Spain, that we managed to get the country back. But we were fairly safe in Europe right up until about a century ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, when we started allowing them to come into Europe, started giving them citizenship, and it going to take it back to the Jews. It was once the French had given them equal citizenship with the rest of us, once they had been emancipated, that they worked at gaining emancipation for them throughout the rest of Europe. And of course, once they had emancipation, then they would advocate for more immigration. So the blacks would come into our countries and the non-whites would come into our countries. You just look at the Windrush and what happened there. It was we talked about this before on the Daily Nationalist, about how the Windrush was a German ship. It was a National Socialist ship for the workers. And after the war, that got taken by the Jewish representative of something to do with the government. And he sold it to another Jew who was a ship broker, who sold it to another Jew who then took the boat to Jamaica, told his Jewish friends in the newspapers to advertise that any of these Jamaicans could come to Britain if they wanted to work. And he filled the boat up full of them and he brought it back to England. And straight away, the Jews that were politicians in England started saying, well, we can't turn them back. We're going to have to allow them in. We can't be seen as racist. And that was the start of it. That was the start of the invasion of Britain. And now we've got London, 60% non-white, and we've got 200 people injured by nail bombs in Manchester. We've got terrorism. We've got rape gangs. And we haven't got anywhere else that we can flee to now. We haven't got a Europe that we can flee to, because all this has happened before, maybe without the technology, but all this has happened before in those formerly white countries, but they were able to come to Europe. And now this is our last stand. This really is our last stand. If something isn't done, then it's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be a civil war. And I really do think that is what's going to happen. But I'm not going to say people should start a civil war, but people should certainly prepare for one. And the most important thing, I think, that people can do for preparing what's going to happen to the future is self-improvement. People need to improve themselves physically, spiritually, mentally, learn everything that you can, learn the truth about our history, keep yourself physically fit, do self-defense lessons, and as well as that, try not to fall for Jewish temptation. Don't use credit cards, just use a debit card. Don't get bank loans. Try not to get a mortgage. Try to ensure that every shop that you go in is manned by white people. Try never to hand over your money to anyone that's non-white. Keep your business just between you and other white people. And try to move to somewhere that is white and keep it white. If not, form white enclaves in the multicultural areas where you are. And try to provide a support network for the whites that are around you. Because we may not have the power to take the government, but we do have power over our own individual lives. And we can even make use of these temptations that the Jews throw to us by resisting them, because that will strengthen us, because struggle does improve our strength. We need things to fight against to improve ourselves. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back tomorrow with Eddie Morrison. God bless and hail victory. We'll be right back.